Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our man Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, fellas. How you guys doing today?
We are doing very well as well, Charles. Thanks for asking. And Titans fans, however, not doing so well right now after the loss to the Ravens on Sunday. Their season is now over. What did you think of the Ravens and their ability to shut down Derrick Henry and the Titans offense in that game? And do you view the Ravens any differently now after that game that they were able to get it done here in Nashville?
Well, they learned. I mean, there's no doubt that the Ravens learned. You know, there was Henry was the priority there. I don't think there was any question about that. And they sold out to make sure that, you know, it was going to be Tannehill who was going to have to beat them. And, you know, the game turned – look, the Peters interception, it's unfortunate to see somebody trip, you know, some feet get tangled on that play. I know there was a little bit of contact up top, but I was a little surprised Tannehill put the ball up. You know, it was a decision he made. Probably would have been a tough play either way. But it came down to – Baltimore essentially sitting here and saying, look, we know that this entire offense is going to be predicated on what Derrick Henry can do to us. I think they took it personally. I think the Ravens took it personally, given really the last year of looking at this team, facing this team, and clearly pretty emotional about the disrespect, you know, in their minds, they felt like the Titans had for the organization. I know that was something that, you know, I had a chance to talk to somebody this week, and you might as well have played of the events of the last, you know, season on a loop in the Ravens facility leading up to that game. And that does matter in the playoffs. I will say that in the postseason, it's gone into many a locker room and found people who have manufactured all the juice they need. And Mike Vrabel came out of an organization in New England where they did that nonstop. I mean, I would go in there for years and years when they were clearly considered the dynastic organization of the NFL. And yet they always felt like somebody was disrespecting them or, you know, not giving them the credit that they deserve. So it's unfortunate for the Titans for things to end like this, but I also think it's a game that showcased a lot of the flaws that began last offseason, the things that we all talked about on this show repeatedly over the course of the season. I think a lot of that showed up in this game, and I think it's worthwhile talking about this whole defensive coordinator thing and how Mike is handling it and the way he's commented on it, and this whole, you know, well, now Shane Bowen was the defensive coordinator the entire season, you know, led the meetings, called the plays. That is a thing, and it's interesting because it seems to be a thing that hovers around a lot of guys that come out of New England. And I think that's something they learned from Bill, and you see people leave New England and have a penchant for holding off on naming coordinator positions in which they want to be involved in that side of the ball. I've seen it happen with Bill O'Brien. It's happened with, you know, when Brian Flores was in New England and he didn't get that defensive coordinator tag, and then he ends up, you know, ascending to being the head coach of the offense of the Miami Dolphins without ever having the DC tag in New England. You have conversations with guys about why that occurs. And when you talk to players, I do think that does matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, Vrabel yesterday made it sound like, you know, like this is all a media creation. Like, oh, yeah, you guys just make a big deal out of title. And I mean, the question that I should have asked next was then, you know, okay, so why even bother then? Why isn't Arthur Smith just the tight ends coach who calls plays? I mean, it seems to matter to some extent, right? I mean, why don't we just say everybody's just a coach and we just walk around and and sing Kumbaya and we'll all just coach each other's players every other day and see what happens. It's just bizarre to me. But do you think, Charles, do you think that Mike, because he's been very much his guys, quote unquote, even though, you know, obviously it doesn't have a huge history of coaching, but it's it's been in the circle for the most part. Do you think it would be good for him to go outside that?
I think that can be beneficial, but it's, I will say this, it is difficult, you know, to go outside the circle because it really is all about trust. And a reason why, when people say, well, why don't these guys name coordinators? So when Brian Flores didn't get that DC tag, there were a lot of people internally, his last year in New England, there were a lot of people who were upset because they felt like he earned it. They're like, well, you know, Matt Patricia eventually got it. You know, why wouldn't, you know, Brian Flores get it? So I asked the question, I'm like, why do these guys come out of New England and they don't give these tags out? And someone in the system told me, like, it's because you have head coaches who learn a lot about control, a lot about wanting to have the ability to control situations and insert themselves when they feel like they want to do that. And if they don't have complete and total trust in someone to run the system as they see it fit, they want the ability to step in at times. And the easiest way to do that is you're not stepping on toes if you don't name a DC. So when Flores had his last year in New England, if Bill wanted to dip in on the scheme from week to week and say, okay, hey, you know, I think we should do this, I think we should do that, if he wanted to lead a meeting that he felt was particularly important or whatever, well, Flores didn't have the DC title. And you know, so that Bill was the de facto DC. Everybody knew that. Like, they knew Flo was calling it. They knew Flo was the guy. But at the same time, he didn't have that title, and players knew what that meant. I think there was a little bit of that with Mike. And so I don't know if there just wasn't the total trust in Shane, or he wanted the – again, it's about control, wanted the ability to control it if he felt like it was necessary. Maybe he saw some of the holes as the season approached and, you know, just thought, hey, I'm not going to give it to him in the summer. Like, I want to retain things the way they are so that I can impress myself upon it. Now, you know, going out and getting someone who is not necessarily in your circle of trust can work. I look at the Rams. Like, they went out and got Brandon Staley. And I remember when Sean McVay, I would go in the Rams organization, there was a lot of talk about Wade Phillips, and you know, Sean didn't think he was as cutting edge as he needed to be at times. And, you know, he wanted a guy who could run a lot of different multiple looks, disguises, all these different things. So he goes out and he gets Brandon Staley. It was a dice roll. Like, people were like, look, you know, Sean had done his due diligence. He, you know, he felt like this was going to be the right call, but it was definitely a dice roll. And you see times where guys get brought into the fold and it just doesn't work out, you know, particularly OCs. Like, John DeFilippo, when he left, you know, Philadelphia and kind of bounced around in Minnesota, ends up in Jacksonville. You know, that was a guy that was brought in at times, and right away you had staffs who were like, yeah, we're not on the same page. Mike Zimmer was never on the same page with him in Minnesota when it came to, like, running the football. So that's the gamble you take, is that you bring in someone, you give them that power, you don't want to step on their toes in front of people and insert yourselves. You can't now because you really gave them that coordinator role. And then they don't necessarily run things exactly the way you feel like it needs to be done. And that creates a whole other, you know, schism inside an organization. So I think there's probably some of that there. But I would just say to fans who listen now, it's not a media creation. It does matter. I asked Deshaun Watson once about Bill O'Brien running the offense there. And Watson said something, and I think this is really interesting now. It's a quarterback's different, but I do think it matters. He said, look, when you got an OC, anytime I need something, that guy's always available to me. Always. I'm always going to him. I'm like, hey, let's do this. Let's do that. Let's have these conversations. He said, when the OC is also the head coach at the same time, he's got other responsibilities. I can't get him all the time. It's not always going to be something that I can reach out to this person. And that, you know, does become important at certain elements of the season to a player. So I don't know, but you tell me. I mean, like, maybe I guess in Mike's mind, he's got the state of the art thinking on this, and he knows the temperature of all those players, and this was all a media problem, and everything that happened defensively, apparently Joe Rexroth caused it.
I mean, you know, I could have gotten it, like, no sacks.
Like, Joe, you should have signed a better pass rusher, Joe. Like, what happened?
Yeah, do a better job, Rexroth. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, let's talk about Arthur Smith, because we had this debate last week on the show about what the best landing spot for him would be, and the Chargers got thrown out there, the Jags, the Texans, and obviously this was before the Philadelphia job even came open at that point. What do you think would be the best landing spot for Arthur Smith, and did the game on Sunday and how inept the Titans offense looked, did that hurt him in any way in terms of discussions with NFL teams becoming a head coach?
Well, you hope teams aren't the prisoner of the moment, right? I mean, you hope teams aren't. It's not a. I would say this: good organizations don't sit there and go, "Well, the last impression we're left with is the overriding, impression." So, I would say that, you look at the development of the wideouts, with the Tennessee Titans. You look at the balance in the offense, the fact that you have a 2,000-yard runner, the development of Ryan Tannehill. I think overall teams have to take that into account and go, well, you know what, yeah, he had a bad last game. Let's not let that be what ultimately undoes how we think about him. If you ask me what's the best situation, I still think now Shad Khan's throwing a wrench in this. I still think that Jacksonville, I would tend to want to go in knowing that I'm walking in the door with a general manager, I'm walking in the door with my quarterback, with the quarterback that we're taking who's going to learn from me. The having all three of those, really cornerstones of the organization all coming in year one, I think can be really beneficial because it eliminates some awkwardness down the line. Now that said, Shad Khan said, I'm keeping the roster control. If I'm a head coach, that's a problem. And I've talked to a couple candidates that are on the coaching circuit. And the day Shad Khan said that about the Jacksonville Jaguars, it shook him up. Like, it's just, okay, well, he's telling general managers they're coming in and interviewing that he's keeping the 53 right now, and we'll see. And he's telling head coaches, I'm keeping the 53, we'll see. Massive red flag. So to me, Jacksonville, that moved Jacksonville out of that top slot because you just don't – you're going to have an owner now who's gonna dictate the talent because of bad experience he had with Tom Coughlin. So if I'm Arthur Smith, I have to think about that and know really what is this guy going to end up doing with the 53-man roster if this is offered to me. So, I think the Chargers to me are probably the best destination just given the talent there, the quarterback that's there to work with, the ability for Arthur Smith to walk in and run the kind of balance, scheme he can run in Tennessee. But I also think some of this is being dictated by, what's going to happen with Brian Daboll. I think, weirdly enough, Doug Peterson, the separation in Philadelphia could actually impact this because I really do think Doug Peterson could be a candidate in New York with the Jets. I think they could look at him. So this has been an interesting coaching search. I feel like it's been elongated a little bit by these Zoom interviews, and the tells that are usually obvious are not as obvious now. Now we're seeing guys get flown in a second time in some places, but the previous tells of, hey, so-and-so goes in, supposed to be a 1 or 2 day thing. Now it's extended. He's still in the building. All of a sudden, okay, you're understanding what's going on with the flow of sort of that interview process. Over Zoom, good luck. Like, it's been a completely different experience, like most things have been all season long. You have a lot of people who aren't necessarily as intimately involved or knowing precisely what's going on with candidates now. So I would say it's more important now than ever that general managers and owners know what they're doing when they're making head coaching hires. And historically, particularly when it comes to owners, I don't know if they ever really know what they're doing.
Brian Daboll, huh? According to Twitter, you think he sucks. So I'm glad you brought him
Thanks,
up again.
Joe.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I love taking your quotes out of context.
Yeah, Joe throws hand grenades into like the worst like fan base. I get like murdered by Bills fans. I'm like, I don't have anything to do with this. Like, listen to the whole interview. This is my fault. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, I gotta figure some way to like get Steelers fans mad at you or something. I'm trying to think of who could really be fun.
Mike Vrabel's right. This is Joe's creating stuff out
There's
here.
A lot, yeah.
You gotta watch it, man. You gotta watch me. So let's go to fans in your town, Charles. Is there any chance they're going to be watching a different quarterback in the future? than the one who currently quarterbacks their professional football team?
I mean, if what, who's going to give up a Herschel Walker trade for, you know, Deshaun Watson? Because there's no way ownership or Nick Caserio, I don't think that anyone's going to let Watson out the door for, you know, I mean, it's going to have to be three firsts, three, I mean, it would have to just be an unbelievable bounty, you know, to get him out the door. Now, I will say this about Nick Caserio. Comes in from a New England system where they know the benefits of not carrying around the massive quarterback contract. Deshaun Watson's got that. There's no, you know, getting away from that. Now, could they extricate themselves from that and, you know, with less pain than you would think? Yes, you know, they could. But I also don't think Casario's first order of business is going to be walk in and, you know, take a player who, you know, clearly an immense talent, let him go out the door, and then all of a sudden insert yourself into the quarterback question and then potentially watch Watson go somewhere else and blow it up the way, like, say, you know, Jalen Ramsey has. Look, Jalen Ramsey is a great player in Jacksonville. He goes to the Rams, and he's been a, you know, really significant linchpin on making that defense the number one, you know, defense that it is. So I don't think Caserio wants to do that. I don't know who would – there's a lot of quarterbacks out there now, so I don't know who would sit there and go, okay, we're just going to give up everything. I do see a lot of, like, dream, ridiculous scenarios out there where people are like, well, hey, maybe it's this guy, or maybe the Broncos can give up Drew Lock in a first. And I'm like, okay, really? Like,
yay!
Come on, like, this is, yeah, I'm like, I don't – this is fantasy football, okay? Like, this is – So it's I will say this, like, what's going on with Watson? This is bad. It's all bad. You don't it is not good to have a guy who has now consistently, I think, kind of let his displeasure get out there now. This isn't new. This has been going on, and it's been a little more subtle before this. And he has an agent in David Mulugeta who, you know, again, go back and look at what happened with Jalen Ramsey. Like, he was able to get Jalen Ramsey off of a team that absolutely did not want to give him up, particularly the owner did not want to give up Jalen Ramsey. And I think that's part of why the owner now has taken the 53 into his searches. And so, you know, but he found a way to get the Rams to offer enough that changed the minds of ownership in Jacksonville, combined with the fact that Ramsey wouldn't get on the field for them. So I don't know. Like, if Watson's willing to go, you know what, I'm just not going to play. Forget it. Like, I'm not going to be in the org. I'm not going to show up during any of the offseason stuff. I'm not showing up for preseason. I'm not playing. I'm going to do the Carson Palmer and say, I'll retire to get out of this organization. Then maybe. But no way the Texans, you know, walk from that kid without just a monumental, astronomical trade. And if they did, it would subvert Nick Caserio from his first offseason on. No one would ever forget this.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, another matchup between the Saints and the Bucs coming up this weekend. Do you think the third time could be the charm for Tom Brady and company in this matchup? How do you see that game going?
I should know this, but I struggle to remember the last time Tom lost to a team three times in a year. And I do think that matters. I think he is a guy that can figure out, you know, what the mistakes he's made in previous stops. And I mean, this is like the old hit the old guy game. Like, I think to me, it's going to boil down to a pretty simplistic view. And because you're not going to throw disguises at these guys, that they're not going to understand things. You're not going to show them defensive looks. They don't, like, you can just take the typical, you know, kind of bullet points of what defenses go through over the course of a week, and whatever you throw at these guys, it's not going to matter. They're going to know what you're doing. It's just, can you hit them or not? Period. Like, which team is going to be able to affect the other guy? Because neither of those guys likes to get hit. You know, you talk to pro personnel guys and, you know, people who do advances on teams, things like that, and they'll tell you the same thing about Brees and Brady. You hit them and their accuracy significantly diminishes, and you'll see them, you know, their eyes are they get a little wonky in the way that they're looking at things, or they're locking at guys, or they're sailing balls. And I think that's something that's become a little more prevalent, you know, in the advanced years. Tom never liked to get hit. He's always kind of been that guy. And Drew has far more banged up this year than he's ever been in his career. And so I think it's just going to come down to which one of these guys gets hit more. And I think that will really affect the way that this game, ends up unfolding. I'll say this about Tampa Bay's offensive line. Like they've, Tristan Wirfs, good Lord, like that kid really, lived up to, I mean, I remember when he was just, you know, we're at the combine and he's working, you know, it's always this workout freak and guys are like, ah, everybody's getting way over their heads on him. He's, you know, he's a good player, but you know, he's going to be a guard and he's, you know, don't get overly locked in on the workout stuff. I don't know, man. It's translated pretty well. He's been fantastic for them. So their offensive line's really, come together. So I look forward to seeing, which one of these guys, wants to end up going to Green Bay to finish out, running. I'm confident that the Packers are going to find their way into the NFC title game. And I cannot imagine, you know, Tampa Tom in the warmth of now, you know, I know, look, listen, I understand he played in New England. I moved to Texas. It took me 3 minutes to acclimate to the environment in Texas. And I don't know which dome, you know, Drew and Tampa Tom going into Lambeau in late January is just a disgusting thought for, you know, someone of that age. Look, I'm 43 and I'm like, I can barely get out of bed like every morning. I don't know how any of these guys are playing like they're a 20-year-old quarterback at the state.
Well, I last thing, Charles, and I mean, I hate to bring it back to Jacksonville, but I got to ask you on athletic non-subscriber copy and paster Urban Meyer, is he going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars' next coach?
I don't know. Like, I will be completely honest with you. He is the most frustrating person on the earth. Like, when it comes to coaching searches, like, he is just the most in and out. Is he really involved? Like, I went through the Urban thing last offseason, okay, with Dallas. Oh, is he, you know, it always felt like Urban wanted that job, and that's how all this stuff got out there about, is Urban Meyer a Dallas Cowboys candidate? He was never a Dallas Cowboys candidate. He was never getting a Dallas Cowboys job. Then all of a sudden he pops up in the Washington search. Oh, is he, you know, Urban's, you know, there are people around Urban that are saying that, you know, he wants Washington, Washington's interested. No, that was never. And so I'm like, what's real, what's not? And I do think Jacksonville is legitimately interested, but the problem I always have is that Urban has one foot in, one foot out, and it's all the way to the end of the search. And, you know, if he wants that job, Jacksonville will hire him. I will say that. But I think that I don't know whether Urban likes the idea of actually having a coaching job, or he likes the idea of being a coaching candidate that teams really actually want more. Like, which one of those is it more? So, I would not, I don't know. Again, I am soft on guys that are, you know, oh, do I want this or don't I want this coaching candidates? Like, I don't, if he wants that Jacksonville job, he should be racing to it like it's the Indy 500. I mean, he should want that job and, you know, be ready to build a program, particularly if they want him, regardless of the 53, because if they're pursuing him, I think he can finesse that to make sure that that 53 ends up where it needs to be.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Charles, great stuff as always, man, and we'll see how Rexro can get your own trouble this week after
the
segment's
thanks,
over.
Joe. Yeah, I appreciate this. Let me know who you're going to upset so I can start working my way out of that situation now.
Urban's camp will be all over you by the afternoon.
That's right.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Charles. Right. Appreciate it, man.
Take care, man. Guys.
Oh, great stuff there as always from Charles Robinson. It's interesting, like going back to the Titans and Shane Bowen, and we talked about it earlier in the show, Joe. The way that Vrabel handled that yesterday with the comments, basically saying, you know, Shane Bowen, he's acted as a defensive coordinator all year, just didn't have the title. He led the meetings, he called the plays. Pretty much everything that you want a defensive coordinator to do, Shane Bowen was doing. It just wasn't a title. And, you know, I guess I apologize stuff from Mike Vrabel and how it took on a life of its own. But it was interesting to get Charles and his vantage point there because, again, if it doesn't matter, then why does anybody have a title? It's just I think the more that time and distance that gets away from this season, the more ridiculous I think it'll be in the way that Vrabel handled the DC situation this year with the Titans.
Yeah, see, and I hear what Charles is saying about, you know, control. I guess it's easier if no one has the title that you can just be like, okay, we're doing this. But I guess to me, if you're the head coach, why can't you do that anyway? Like,
yeah.
Like even with Belichick, I think I'd never really thought about it in those terms. Like if someone has, like, he tiptoed around Patricia because he had the title. I mean, that seems a little strange to me. I've looked at it more like, let's not put the weight of the world on Shane's shoulders yet, like kind of a tryout year sort of thing. I mean, it seems more like that than what Charles was talking about there. But regardless, it didn't work. I mean, it didn't work, and it's got to be fixed. And I don't see how this defense, the number one thing is personnel. I believe that 100 times out of 100, more the biggest problem was they didn't have players who could make an impact, especially up front, to help you be a good defensive football team. But there's got to be a different look to the defensive coaching staff next year, including someone with the title that apparently means nothing.
So, Joe, speaking of titles that apparently mean nothing, offensive coordinator Arthur Smith, obviously very heavily involved in the coaching searches going across the NFL. Now one more job open, and also potentially one more head coaching candidate out there in Doug Peterson. Does that factor in at all to Arthur Smith? And also, like, does the game that just happened against Baltimore – does that affect his coaching candidacy one way or the other, in your opinion, in this search?
Well, and the second thing, I agree with Charles. I mean, if you're going to go on that, then you're screwed when you're hiring a coach. You're going to make a bad hire. I mean, that's – yeah, it's one day, and the large stack of evidence shows you what Arthur Smith is as an OC. Plus, you know, one bad day of calling plays. I mean, head coach is about more than that anyway. So it's going to be much more about his interviews and references and all these things. I think he's going to get probably more than one offer here. Question is, will he get the right one? I mean, if all he gets is the Lions offer, I would advise him to come back to the Titans and give it another run. But this is a highly attractive compared to most years and the job cycle of the NFL. I cannot remember more jobs with attractive quarterback situations than this. Usually it's, I mean, I know in some cases it's because you're going to draft one, but still, how are you not excited about the idea of coaching Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, for example? And then we'll see what the Jets are going to do. And then a lot of these places have good quarterbacks in place. So I just can't imagine he won't end up with something. But Doug Peterson, yeah, he's the one guy who gets fired who you think, okay, he might bounce right back somewhere and take one of these jobs himself. So, I mean, it's basically, to me, like Lions. I hear what Charles is saying on ownership with the Jags, and also I think you worry about ownership with the Texans, you know. But other than the Lions and the Jets, I think everything else looks awfully attractive.
When we come back, we're going to switch gears and dive into the Nashville Predators. Preds TV analyst and former goaltender Chris Mason will join us. So looking forward to that conversation with him. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.